I'm very pleased to be here with you today. As I've said earlier, this is my first visit to Alaska, and it's a wonderful education to me and an absolute delight to my mind's eye to picture the beauty of your state. And the thing that I have liked about it is the diversity of the people here. You've got Eskimos and Indians and blacks and whites and the people who live out on the Aleutians. A wonderful diversity that I'm sure you appreciate. And it seems to me that it makes learning from each other and collecting knowledge, total knowledge about Alaska, a very exciting experience. I'm interested, as you are, in lifelong learning. From my point of view, learning only stops when rigor mortis sets in. We're learning as long as we are alive, and this in itself is a very important way to change attitudes, because the common mythology is that old people can't learn anything, and that your mind gets soft. After 50, you can't learn anything, for heaven's sake. And senility is the only proper way to end it. And you all are putting into a new prospect and a new appreciation that learning and the enhancement of the mind, the brain, is a working muscle that grows more sturdy and strong every day. Is that true, would you say?
Yes, that's true.
How long have you been doing this particular kind of education? I find it very, very exciting.
Is this 20 years?
Well, in 1978, a grant from the Alaska State Office on Aging initiated the Creative Adventures for Seniors program. At that time, we were called Creative Adventurers.
Ah, that's a nice...
Now we're the senior program with Tanana Valley Community College.
But you're still adventuring.
Oh, well, yes. Oh, yes. Certainly. Yes. Yes.
What kinds of courses and what kinds of involvement have you been able to set in place? You've got quite a history. Was it hard to get it started?
No, we had a wonderful person that undertook it. Bobby Moore undertook to start it with six people who were interested in swimming. They were older people. And then the swimming program just grew and grew and grew as it became better known. And then it branched off into anything that anybody could think of that anybody wanted, and there was enough students to go along with it. And then we got instructors. And
in other words, you set up your own curriculum, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
You can.
We still do, to an extent.
And you, as an advisory committee, you have oversight and guidance for that.
They are my eyes and ears in the community. But what we've branched into beyond the swimming and recreational courses, which we feel are so very important, we've also gone into computer skills and writing skills. We have many seniors that are now getting down to the task of putting the story of their life on paper.
And it's marvelous.
We're turning out some terrific novels.
Novels and essays. Are any of those going to be published?
I hope to get several of them published, yes.
Isn't that exciting to see yourself in print? Wow.
Well, I think it is particularly exciting because many of those that came early to Alaska had so many adventures.
Before statehood, probably.
Before statehood. And in making your way up here, it was very difficult for them, but they took it in stride and overcame everything in order to make a place for themselves here. It's very seldom that you'll find a third or a fourth generation person of white in Alaska.
When did you all come? I suppose at various times.
I came in 42.
Well, you were way ahead of statehood, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Have you written about what it was in that time?
Well, a little bit.
Or but talked not, about not it
this,
on tape.
Not in this program. I belong to other clubs.
Oh, I'd love to talk with you at length about what it must have been like.
What year did we compete? Was it 52?
53.
Or 53.
We came to Annette Island. That's in southeast Alaska. And then from there we went to McGrath. And then from McGrath we came to Fairbanks. And we've been in Fairbanks about 28 years. And my wife was with the BIA Bureau of Indian Affairs. And I was with the Federal Aviation.
And you, of course, continuing to live and...
Oh, yeah.
You're going to stay on. You know,
well, most of us that have a taste of Alaska, we go out and they say, you know, you have friends out, we say outside, or the lower 48, or the old 48.
I'm learning those terms.
And they always say, this is a place to live. But we always turn back to Alaska because we think this is it. There's no other place.
You don't have the traffic and the many people and this type of thing. In fact, we're spoiled here. When we get in a little heavier traffic, like even Seattle, we feel that it's almost too much. We enjoy going out for short periods, but we enjoy it here much more.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Our grandkids are here.
I was just going to ask you whether... Where your families were. They're here.
Both of our children and their families. The rest of you, too, I'm sure.
Is this true for the rest of you on the advisory committee?
Are you born here.
You were born here.
This is our native Alaskan.
How old are you?
71.
Oh, I'm slightly. I'm going to be 79 in August.
Oh, really? Yes,
yes. Wonderful.
Amazing. Wonderful.
Yeah. I'll be 75 tomorrow.
Oh, well, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yes. What are the popular kinds of instruction that you're offering now, and how do you recruit people for it? Word of mouth, the brochures,
word
radio.
Word of mouth does a lot. We run articles in the newspaper. We publish our own newsletter that's available free to anyone who's interested in it.
I'd love to take a copy back.
I shall have one for you this evening.
Love to have it.
And we also do radio spots, public service announcements.
Mm-hmm. That you prepare yourselves.
Yes. Yes. And I think word of mouth does quite a bit. We have an active group and they hold no bones about telling everybody about it.
I believe that is the way it goes because, mm-hmm. like this morning, I was trying to get a few more people to sign up for a class called Fantasy Golf. And before I left the swimming class, I was able to get enough people to sign up for fantasy golf.
Oh, good.
So we know that will go.
That's the best kind of advertising, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Word of mouth.
What is fantasy golf? It's golf in a, it isn't the miniature golf. It is golf inside a building where you learn to really hold the clubs correctly and all that, and then you hit the ball against a canvas. Then it is recorded by computer that this is, say, Pebble Beach, and then it tells you where you actually went on Pebble Beach by the computer. So you're actually playing a game by staying in one area.
We are going to play all the best golf courses of the world without ever leaving Fairbanks.
Right.
Sounds interesting. I didn't know what it was all about. I thought it was like miniature golf.
Yes,
no,
that's what I would have thought too.
That's where people, a lot of them didn't sign up because they said, well, I don't like miniature golf.
Yeah. But they have one of those places out on Van Horn Road.
That's the one. That's the one, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was out there last year.
Uh-huh. Well, we have found that our programs that require exercise are the ones that are the most popular with us, mm-hmm. and the ones that we feel that we have to do regularly every week. Yes. And so we'll keep fit and young and healthy. And
well, there's abundant evidence that exercise helps in all kinds of ways to maintain vigor and I have arthritis, and I exercise regularly. I don't attend a class. I think I would do much better. You get encouragement from each other.
Do you find that?
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
And you make good friends.
It is fun.
And it is a way.
Yes.
What other... is there interest in writing, as you were saying, and creative writing and poetry and things like that?
The interest is not as strong as it is in the recreational courses, but the people that become involved in the writing classes get hooked on them.
Yes.
And continue on. We have several artists sitting at the table.
Our oil painting.
Grandma Moses is of Alaska.
At least that. Yes. At least.
Oil, watercolors, pastels.
Well, you could use whatever you wanted to. Most of us are doing oils. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the semester, we have an art show. Mm-hmm. And we...
Where is the art show? At the...
Well, we have a graduation exercise, mm-hmm. too, at the end of our semester. Or we have been to the Pioneers' home, too, and have shown our artwork. Where else have we shown?
North Star Council on Aging.
North Star Council on Aging.
A display of our paintings.
At one time, we had a drama department, too, and we put on some plays that a playwright in the area created special plays for us that had to do with older people. And at one of them, we gave six performances in different places. Yeah. Joe Elizabeth was one of them that was in it. And Hilda May was in it, too. Yes.
The Gray Panthers in Chicago have a free street theater program that has been developing one-act plays that they've taken around to a variety of places. And the one-act plays are built out of their life histories of the Flayers.
Oh.
Our generation, you know, we've lived through some extraordinary changes.
Yes.
And seen things that are tragic and joyous, all kinds of dramatic episodes are part of our own history. And they put them together in a very interesting way. And it seems to me that what you're doing with history, with your writing and history, oral histories, you might want to think about that too. You all write the play out of your life.
That's an excellent idea.
We'd have all sorts of stories right here at this table.
Tremendous stories, right?
Could we ask you something now? And that was, we know the name Gray Panthers, but we really don't know exactly what you are and what you represent and how you came about. And we're very interested in knowing.
The Gray Panthers are a coalition of people of different ages, old people and young people, working together for social change. The organization began in the summer of 1970 when six of us were forced to retire from our jobs. The mandatory retirement. How many of you did you have to retire, or were you able to keep on working?
Well, I had the option of retiring or staying on. But at the time, I thought it was better. In our organization, Bureau of Indian Affairs, they were trying to get more Natives in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this is a good idea. So I got a bit earlier. But it was for a good cause. But I've done a lot of other things since then, a lot of volunteer and other work.
Well, it wasn't really retirement for you. It was simply moving in another direction.
That's right.
We began with six of us, just as you began with your educational work, your recreational work. And I think there's some value, as you undoubtedly have found, with a small group. There can be good personal exchange and easy decision making. You know, you can come to agreement in a small group where it takes so much longer to hear the views and harmonize those differences in a big group. The issue that we chose was the war in Vietnam in the late 60s and the early 70s. We were caught in a tragic situation. And we said, well, we have nothing to lose. We can be with the young who are being drafted and with the young who are resisting the draft. And that was the beginning. Several of our people were arrested for protesting the draft along with the young. And that was something that none of us had ever experienced before. In the summer of 1970, we had the six of us began to meet in March, in April. The summer of 1970, we had a general meeting. We invited people we knew who thought would be interested, again, word of mouth. And to our utter surprise, at International House at Columbia University, 75 people came. We were enormously pleased, and we realized that we had brought together a group that had similar interests and needs, and we decided then and there that that was the thing we wanted to do. We said, let's do the most radical, outrageous thing that we can possibly think of, because we have nothing to lose. We're free to be outrageous and to do something that might make a difference in other people's lives, and certainly our own. And we've changed our own lives, and I think we've changed the lives of many. Then we got interested in the issues of age because of the White House Conference on Aging, which was held in Washington in 1971. And we were not credentialed to be delegates, so a little group of us took on press credentials. We got ourselves, you know, two of us made up newspapers, you know, that we had printed, and they were not very fussy about press credentials, and we got our press badges, and we were in the press room. Wasn't that a neat way to do it?
Yes, it
so
was.
So we were kind of infiltrating, and we also, in that period, organized what was known informally as the Black House Conference on Aging, because the White House Conference on Aging was pretty lily white, and it was patterned without reference to the, you know, tremendous minorities in America. The Hispanics, the Indians, the blacks, you know, the great diversity, and aging is different. The views of different ethnic and racial groups are different. We have to learn from each other. So we had the Black House Conference on Aging, which brought together, and the young and the old great families organized that, and there were 900 people. And we had a two-day conference, and the church where Lincoln worshipped in Washington housed us, and we brought sleeping bags, and we slept in the pews overnight in Lincoln's church. And then the next day, we marched down the White House with our proclamation for the Black House Conference. And we were all very peaceful and orderly, you know, doing it perfectly, correctly. We didn't have a marching permit, and that got us in slight trouble with the Capitol Police. And then, to our utter dismay, when we went to the Capitol gate, and the gate clanged closed in front of us, we turned around, and there were eight policemen on horseback riding into us. And I was knocked down by one of those police horses. Well, that was one of our early beginnings, and that made us aware that there were many, many issues that people who had time and experience and nothing to lose could get into. And we've been doing some things ever since.
Maybe they'd like to hear about some of those particular projects that you've undertaken.
Well, we're working now on, as we have been before, for a new healthcare system. We've been helping to work with medical students to change the way in which medical schools teach about the particular chronic ailments of late life. There have been no courses in gerontology and no courses in geriatric medicine until very recently ended in medical schools. And the doctors that were available to help us. We're afraid of old people and didn't want to treat us. And there were some very unpleasant things that were happening, but there is some changing being done. Now geriatric medicine is becoming a new specialty. We hope it doesn't become a specialty because it ought to be a part of, it ought not to be age segregated. It ought to be a part of the general understanding of medicine. We're also very much interested in war and peace. The Great Panthers have been very concerned about the defense budget, the large numbers of money that are the dollars that have been transferred from education and health services to plan destruction of missiles and Trident subs and all the others we have protested. We have worked consistently for nursing home reform and have organized friendly visitors, and were instrumental in getting started the National Coalition for Nursing Home Reform that a Grey Panther started and now directs, Elma Holden in Washington. We'd love to send you material. Our next big project is to work on a series of short television shows that we're going to do ourselves. A couple of our people have had some modest experience in television. We're learning about that. And we're going to do a series on health tips that we think might have general appeal. We're continuing to monitor the media. Some of the shows have been very derogatory and obnoxious, and some of them have been rather influential and commendatory. How do you all feel? We had a very interesting discussion about the Wendy ad, you know, where's the beef?
Oh, yes.
How do you all feel about that ad? Have you seen it, and have you talked about it at all?
I haven't.
You know,
I've seen
Clara,
it.
Have you seen it?
I've seen a little bit of it today.
Clara is the star of the show, and Clara is a tiny old woman who is deaf. And suddenly a star. She's absolutely marvelous. Where's the beef? She says. And some people thought that Clara stereotyped old people, but we thought we issued a press release and we sent a kudo to the company. To that chain, and saying that we had no beef with Wendy. We thought that she was showing responsible consumership. You know, she was looking at what she was buying and complaining about it and trying to change it. We've been working to end mandatory retirement and to bring together old people and young people who will test and try out new models of shared living instead of living in age-related retirement homes. Those are some of the goodies that we're into. And we are absolutely in your corner. You should know that on the whole business of health tips and exercise and good personal health habits. And we're also very much in your corner about the importance of education and the new kinds of learning that we can be a part of, I think, is one of the great hopeful signs of this age. Do you all agree?
Yes. You never stop learning.
You never do, do you? What has been your experience in the classrooms? Do you find that young people welcome you and are friendly? And
yes, very much so.
Very much so.
Did that surprise you, or
no?
Did
not
you
really.
It?
Knowing a lot of the young people, too much. No.
Some people have hesitated to get involved in continuing education because they say they can't keep up with the young people and that they won't be welcomed. But I think your experience of being welcomed and some of the objection has come from the faculty. Because, you know, you challenge them, and you can say, well, I didn't find it that way. In my experience, it was so-and-so.
We have a tremendous foster grandparent program going in Fairbanks.
Oh, I'm
glad. Involves senior people.
Yes.
And I think that's going on.
And the
very
children
well.
Benefits so many.
Yes.
Right. Is there much interaction with schools, with elementary and high school students and older Alaskans?
I think it's up to the individual teacher that sometime invites.
Are there senior aides or who come in? That might be something that.
That is something that has gone across the boards.
We had a few volunteers when I retired from teaching 5 years ago and taught primary grades,
mm-hmm.
and it was up to me. I mean, I could invite mm-hmm. seniors
and
in.
You?
Like, yes, we used grandparents and just in any way we could. Yeah. Now, Kay, you were involved. You and Jack just.
Yes, just recently.
Just recently, they were.
One of the elementary schools in which we were invited to come in and tell her about our experiences in early Alaska. Well,
I bet the children loved it.
Except it was the end of the day, and I think they were anxious to get home. I would like to go back and have more time. Mm-hmm. I could see where there was a little need for more time and not be the end of the day when the children were tired.
Yeah.
I think it could have been improved.
And restless, too.
And restless, yeah. Yes.
But it would be a marvelous thing because you people have a whole new view of the state from your perspective.
And they share that in the summer. We run elder hostel programs, which bring 50 people at a time from outside. And oftentimes we did have elder hostelers from Europe, did we not? A
yes.
couple years
yes.
ago. And our local people come and participate in the elder hostel classes or will participate in the social events in the evenings mm-hmm. and exchange their views of what it's like to live in Alaska and talk to them about life on the outside, and it's a tremendous learning experience all around.
Oh, I'm sure it must be, particularly the people who come in from.
That has been, though they've loved the classes that they get, which we gear towards some kind of Alaskana, the thing that they have pointed out was their favorite of the entire session was the contact with the local senior citizens.
That's interesting.
Well, we invited the lady from Germany to a week at the lake, at Birch Lake. And, of course, in Germany, everything is so restricted that she just was so overwhelmed by the freedom that we have here. She thoroughly enjoyed it.
What did you do about the difference in language? Or did
she spoke English very well. She worked for a school. Her husband died quite a number of years ago. So she spoke very good English. Made it real fun.
Mm. Sometimes it's interesting to have people who come from Europe with foreign backgrounds or language experience to come with current visitors from Europe and brush up on your German and your French or your Flemish I think that the language is a lovely thing to continue to learn.
Kay is taking French lessons now in preparation for a trip to France.
Yes, I'll probably be able to read and write it, but even when I was 21, I had difficulty speaking French, and I'm still having difficulty speaking French, but I have enjoyed being in the classroom very much.
And have there been people of different ages in the classroom? It has been an age-integrated class.
Yes, there's another older couple in my class, but the rest are, they're in their 20s and maybe early 30s, and we're all preparing. It's an evening class, so we're all preparing for trips that we plan to go on. So it's a lot of fun.
Because we're talking about trips, I don't know if you realize, but Maggie went to China. What year was that?
Well, I went first in 1976, right after Chairman Mao died, and the new regime was being put in place. And then again in 1978, a number of great painters have been to China. And in the 2-year period we saw, some very interesting changes. I was absolutely enthralled with what I saw. I thought we had much to learn from the Chinese. And we were always lecturing them. But don't do that, you know, now avoid the mistakes that we have made. There was no age segregation. That was the thing that struck us. We asked where there were old age homes. And in the two journeys, and they were fairly long journeys over different parts of the country, I saw only two, and they called them homes of respect for the aged. One was in Shanghai, and it included only elderly men who had been dock workers on the great docks of Shanghai and who had been so poorly paid. This was long before the revolution. That they had never been able to afford. In those days, you purchased a bride, and you had to have money to establish your family. These people had no children to care for them. So the state took care of them and established this home. And the second home that I saw was in outside of Peking, or Beijing, as they now speak of it. And that was for miners. Again, all males, which is so different from the population of our retirement homes that are largely populated with women. The lifespan is about the same in China. Men live slightly longer in China than American men do. We were interested in that. We were very fascinated in both groups. There were medical students, and in the second group, there were two medical students and a physician, and a medical worker in mental health. And we were all intrigued with the healthcare system, the way in which the barefoot doctors, who are not barefoot and not doctors, have available healthcare everywhere. We were very much interested in the way in which herbal medicine and all those, and acupuncture. We saw surgeries with acupuncture as the only anesthesia. But the availability of it was just fascinating.
I went over to Japan and China in 76, too.
Were you struck with the things we could learn?
No, I went with a group of senior citizens, Dottie England was the one that took us over there. We were going to Japan, and we stayed so many days there. And then I think there was four or five of us that went to China.
To China.
And it was really wonderful.
Yes.
What part I seen of?
Well, in the first group, there were two, a man and a woman who had been missionaries, and who had worked in China. Years and years before, and in China in the 30s and 40s, and even earlier than that, there was massive starvation, and hunger and poverty, and the agriculture was so poorly developed that the land had been overworked and the farms didn't produce, and they could not get over, these missionary types could not get over how beautiful the farms were.
Yes.
The collective farms that the land was owned and farmed in common, perfectly beautiful, and there were no beggars on the street. They couldn't get over that. Now they say, since quote modernization, this is what we were lecturing the Chinese about in 1978. Don't do as we're doing. They've broken up those agricultural communes and redistributed little parcels of the land that are going to go back to the same old, because they don't have a balanced ecology. Uh-huh. There isn't water, there isn't, you see, the same kind of soil, but in these large collective farms, there was a collective effort, but there was also a cooperative, small-scale effort, and everybody benefited. So we just wonder.
How did the care given in the nursing homes compared to the care that's given in nursing homes in the States?
We didn't find any nursing homes in China.
Well, the homes that you've spoken about,
we thought it was very good. We spent a half a day in both of those places, so we had a chance to visit. We had lunch with the residents. We met the staff, and we had interpreters, as you had. The interpreters do a wonderful job, don't they? The staff were all young people. And there was one elderly dock worker who put his arm around the young person who was serving him lunch and said, he's my son. And in some of our retirement homes, there's a very different, I mean, the staff and the residents. But in both of those, it was much more, we're all in it together.
Hmm. Aren't the older people there taken care of by the families?
Yes.
I mean, that's why there aren't these homes, where America has gotten away from
that. And you see, the neighborhood is very intact. And the neighbors look after neighbors. And the old people have very explicit roles. They're mostly the ones, because women work as well as the men, and the older people are the caregivers of the children. We found. Did you find that?
Yes, I think when the younger ones married, well, the older people could only live with them just so long, and then they had to go to a place where there was all elderly people. They couldn't stay with their sons and daughters.
Now, part of it that's happening in some of the in the cities, mm-hmm. but. Out in the countryside, in the smaller communities, there were still part of. And I think that this is one of this is a change that has occurred in Japan. Japan had the same kind of history of family care and concern, the extended family. But we found that in modern Japan, where you've got people herded into big cities, the old people are left behind, mm-hmm. or they're in some kind of institution, separated from their families. So modernization, while it has brought a higher standard of living to some, has violated, you know, a lot of the things that we see not really good. And we wish there were a way of changing.
Yeah, do you think that's inevitable? I mean, does it have to be that way?
Well, we look, the Grey Panthers have observer status at the UN. If any of you come to New York, we'd love to know about it and have you go to the UN. Have you been to the United Nations?
I haven't.
You have. Mm-hmm. They have a very interesting a committee on aging that Sylvia Kleinman, our representative at the UN, chairs. There are 70 members of this Committee on Aging, and they're looking at aging around the world.
What part of New York?
It's located at UN headquarters on First Avenue at 42nd Street. Mm. It's a huge complex from 42nd to 48th Street on First Avenue.
Usually when I went there, it was so cold until I was happy to get out of there, because I was going over to the British West Indies.
I know. New York can be very cold. And the wind whistles down the dampness.
It can be colder in New York,
yes.
Or you can feel it more so than up here.
I can imagine that this would be true. But you may want to come in the spring or the time when it, or you wouldn't want to miss Alaskan spring, but you couldn't do that.
Now, I shall be going to India in June. And do you have any branch of your workers over there?
No, we don't. We have corresponding members and groups in West Germany and in England. And we have one in Israel. and Denmark, Copenhagen. We'd like to have more, but we don't have the money. And anyway, it's interesting to correspond. But what you might do at the UN is to meet the delegates from India, the UN ambassador. And this would be of interest, I think, to get a view of what their diplomatic corps could do.
Yes, because I just found out last night they have 700 million people. And yes. It just blew me when I heard 700 million people. And I thought, that's where I'm going to visit.
China has a billion.
A billion
population. And a very, very well-established and accepted birth control, family planning. It's accepted and abided by. One or two children, period.
Mm. They have to, though.
Yes, they have to. And I understand that India has tried that, but that it has not, it's not been well received by the people.
Why would you say that modernization, well, I mean, just as a thought, why would, what factors in modernization would you feel cause such a segregation of generations? What?
Well, I think modernization in this century or in this decade has changed the work style and the nature of work and where people live in a farm-based, a rural society. People live on the land. They live in family groups, in tribes, in close proximity. And they work all their lives. In modernization, and which goes to urbanization, piled up away from the land into the cities, and you're not working on the land growing things, you're making things in factories. And there have been such radical changes in the way things are made. So people don't change that. You know, all of us have some hesitancy about newness. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to institute change. But we've been, in the last decade, the job picture in the United States has completely changed, at least in the South 48. There's steel workers and automobile workers and other workers in basic industry that are unemployed, and they will never have jobs. And more of the big plants are robotized, and very, very expensive machinery costing millions and millions of dollars has replaced human labor. And the labor movement has not fought it, and we've thrown away people with basic skills. And what do they do? Now everything is computerized.
Is there a way to turn that around?
I wish I knew. I think that we've got to develop small scale industry, and develop new jobs. Little operations instead of these great big multinational conglomerates. And I like to think that in the field of energy, I would love to see Alaska, for instance, with the great sweeps of wind that you've got, go in for windmills. The farms, you know, my grandfather was a farmer in Western New York. And they had windmills. My grandmother, my mother's people came from Holland, and windmills.
What does windmills do? Make electric?
Well, they generate the power.
Don't we have, Pete, don't there they are. Have wind power up on the, by Prudhoe Bay?
Well, they're along the coast, they're trying, and I guess it's very successful. All your villages along the coast.
They are.
Uh-huh. And another thing that up here that we haven't tapped is our hydro.
We got the biggest source of hydro in the world here. These rushing streams.
Yeah. Well, see.
You have hot springs too, don't you?
Hot springs. Yes. That is a big thing here. We have hot springs all over the state in different locations. And one time they were putting a dam, they were talking about a dam at Rampart up on the Yukon River. And that would have supplied all Alaska and most of the northwest United States. And it just was in the talking stage. In those days, it was our senator from here by the name of...
Greening.
Senator Greening. He was very well known.
You've heard of him.
Very respected man. I met him.
Yeah.
Had a super mind.
The older he got, the greater he got. I mean, in his wisdom.
Fantastic.
Is he no longer living?
He's not living.
He passed away several years ago. I don't know how many, but he's passed.
But what a heritage he left, didn't he?
To everybody, yes.
Great.
Never forgetting.
Do you see anybody coming along to...
Boy, that's a hard one to replace him. We have a building on campus, the Greening Building. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of memories.
But I would love to see people who have this memory of windmills and what you're saying is starting up along the coast. I would hope that that might be one of the ways in which you could lead the rest of the country in hydropower. Some of the New England mills that were once closed are reopening of the hydropower dams that they once had, that they've allowed to decay and just go down the drain. I think that the reflections and the memories of old people are a rich resource, you know, for turning this country around.
You know, another thing we have here is the greatest tides in the world. That's right. I think...
Well, you could harness that.
What is it, 20-some feet or...
Almost 30, I think.
It's close
almost
to 30 mm-hmm. feet.
There's only one tide difference that's bigger, and I think that's the Bay of Fundy.
Uh-huh. And you can see, like, in Anchorage here, where the bay is there, and the way it comes in, say, you know, when the tide is moving back, back into the shallower waters, it's just amazing, the force. And then when it recedes, the force that goes out, and that to me would be, that would take care of a lot of our, Anchorage is such a large city now. And of course they're looking into hydro too.
That's very encouraging.
Now how would the people sitting at this table go about beginning a group to impress the legislature about what we can do with power or anything else that they have a deep conviction for?
Well, we've been looking at the opportunity that we have to be the watchdogs and the watch bitches, you know, the monitoring group of people who go to the legislature when it's in session, and read up on what's pending, and get together. And I think in the university and college setting that you've got here in Alaska, you can plug into the economics and political science resources of the university and draft some legislation and get some young people to work with you on it. I think it would be exciting for you as an advisory committee in education to do some new kinds of political education and some new kinds of legislative proposals, some legislative initiatives.
Political action.
And I suspect that in your own histories, you've got a lot of that tucked away that you could bring out and put to use.
Or the suggestions you made to the faculty, you said that they should infiltrate and...
Yes.
At lunch and...
I was saying that the faculty and they should assign students to write papers and go to the senior centers and work on some of the issues that concern the issues of age, and help to intergenerate those centers. I'd like to see the senior centers pioneer. You know, you could set up a network of centers in different parts of Alaska, senior centers, that would test out the windmills or other alternative sources of energy. And what mm-hmm. a blessing this would be. You could get a windmill, small-scale windmills. I'm not talking about these great big things with propellers 6 feet broad, but or wide, but I'm talking about small-scale. And it could be an alternate source of energy that would help enormously for people on fixed incomes. The cost of energy is horrible in the lower 48.
It's horrible up here too.
Is it higher?
Yes. Horrible. Although we have innumerable types of minerals that haven't been tapped yet all around us in these hills, it's too expensive, and we don't. Yeah. To be
but you got
to.
The wind blowing free.
We don't have too much wind up here in Fairbanks.
I think Big Delta would be the place to start. Or
they've
Palmer.
Done experimenting there.
Both those places have wind, I swear, 24 hours a day.
In our passes, like coming from Anchorage or to Big Delta, see, there's always a change there. The wind's always blowing one direction or the other. You hardly ever see it that it's not moving. But like here in Fairbanks, it's we're in a valley here, and it's just really pocketed in that nothing can move, actually. But in our hills here, our higher hills, where we live, Ray and I, we always have a wind there in the higher hills. And that's where you can, you know, pick it up there.
And it could be wired in. There, I think of this, of all of us, in our late life as being adventurers and pioneers and foretasters. You know, we're futurists. We're testing the future on the basis of our past experience. And I find that an enormously challenging thing to do. And it bolsters the self-esteem, too. You have a confidence that you can cope with change because we've lived through so many.
Many changes.
You know, a little. I spoke at a college campus a couple months ago, and there was quite a mixture of the audience. And sometimes I ask who's the oldest and the youngest, and then have people recognize that we're all getting old. You know, the youngest and the oldest have something in common. They're all getting old. And the youngest in that particular meeting was 6 years old. The daughter of one of the faculty people. And she came up to me after the session and said, I would like to ask you a question. I didn't want to ask it in the group, but what was your favorite television show when you were my age? Isn't that darling? And I said, you know, that was a... I blinked and I said, we didn't have television. Why, utter belief, no television. Did you have radio? No, we didn't have radio. We didn't even have a telephone.
No.
She said, were you poor? And I said, yes and no. I mean, but nobody had television.
Electricity. You didn't have electricity.
We didn't have electricity.
That's right.
There's people up here now that has got electricity.
Or running water.
But that made it me remember how many changes I had seen. And here you are still in frontier land where there's still places where there's no electricity. You didn't have rural electrification. How in the world did you escape that? Sheer luck, probably, huh?
I did have one question. Is that we were talking about the word panther. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you get this question a long time, because many, many times, but where did the panther come from?
You know, there's a lovely little quote from Ogden Nash, who wrote that lovely satirical verse, when called by a panther, don't answer.
Oh, I see.
Well, actually, we called ourselves in the early days the Consultation of Older and Younger Adults for Social Change.
Oh, goodness.
And we were doing a talk show on WPIX-TV in New York City. And the producer of that show, Benjamin Gum, I'll never forget him, said, "That is a terrible name. You're the Grave Panthers." And we said, "Wow, that's for us." And then some people didn't like it because they said, "The Black Panthers, they're terrible, violent." And I said, "That's what you think. But the Black Panthers and the Grave Panthers were together in the early days." Mm-hmm. And it was when the police in Chicago and Philadelphia declared open warfare on the Black Panthers that their great organization was destroyed, and some of them turned to violent ways. Mm-hmm. But we had through the years very warm and loving associations with the Black Panthers. They had a school lunch program. They had a nutrition program long before there was anything under the Americans Act. Mm-hmm. They did some very interesting things in winterizing houses and an escort service for old people who were frail and not very mobile. And they got no credit, no press.
Well, this has certainly all been swept under the rug. Uh-huh.
No, well, the only thing that people hear is the other.
The other, I know.
Yes. The and bad that, part, yes.
And the media deliberately played that up. Mm-hmm. And the police in Philadelphia really just sought to get them. And they were really framed. If something happened in the neighborhood, a theft or some kind of shootout, they immediately thought of the Black Panthers. And many were falsely arrested for crimes that they never committed. And that the media played up.
Especially in Chicago.
Well, if we wanted to form something like your organization here.
Or a chapter.
Could we borrow your name, or would we
I'd love to send you copies of our material, our magazine, our manual and other things, and have you think of whether it would be useful for you to be a Grave Panther group in Fairbanks, and we would send you a charter, and you could use the name, which is a help and valuable, and you could pioneer in do some things that would enrich our national program because of the interesting things that you're doing here. And I think what you're pioneering in this kind of adult education is great.
It is, but I could see where we could expand.
Oh, you could, yes.
There's always room for action. I'd like to thank Maggie very much for being with us. We may have been attending the first meeting of the Grey Panthers in Fairbanks.
You know, making history today.
Making history today. Thank everyone else for being in the studio with us. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.